Phil Salanter took a vacation in the summer in a town that had a place to sleep, and in the 1840s, when this took place, you know, there was no butcher shops per se. And everybody had to go and to the farm, buy a chicken, even in the places where they were staying for relaxation, to buy a chicken and bring it to the sheikhed and then have them prepare the food for them. And there was a anical of the Tosis Yontif who heard that Rav Sol Salanter was coming to this vacation place, and he heard that since he was one of the Gdele Hador, he wanted to hear about him. And his cousin was in the same relaxation center, whatever it was, in the 1840s or 50s. So he wrote his cousin a letter to ask him if he met Rav Sol Salanter. So he said that there was a Yid there who was dressed in a regular suit, who had no Masharasim, who for the several weeks they were there, 1 week he went to the butcher, he went to the sheikhet to pick up the chickens, and the other week Yisrael went to pick up the chickens. And he had no idea that the other person was Rav Sol Salanter, because he had no gabbai with him, he didn't dress special ever. And he asked him where he's from, and he finally realized that he was dealing with one of the Gedolei Hador. He was a super genius, one of the greatest minds of his generation. It was known that Chaim Brisker used to say that, you know, it was one of the great minds of the generation, was Rav Sol Salanter and the Malbim, his father. And he was such a tzanua that he could not even tell, not by the way he davened, not the way he talked, that he was in the presence of one of the Gedolei Hador. Because Hatznei Aleches and Hashem Elokecha, the Navi says, is a charge to every Jew, not just to women. It's a charge to every Jew. And Rav Sol Salanter was mahader ad ma'oid in tznius, to such a point of where he could come to a place and no one would even have a clue that he was Rav Sol Salanter. And that type of tznius, that level of tznius, is something that it's very hard to reach, but something to strive for. In 1885, I want to tell you a story that happened in 1885 that I heard from. This story I heard from my own grandmother, who witnessed this story herself as a six-year-old girl. Sol Salanter's Talmidim used to go, before they got engaged, they would tell the prospective kallahs that the closest Talmidim, Rabbi Sol Salanter, went from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Yom Kippur to a house in the city of Al-Aksat, which was near Kovna, by a wealthy Balabas, who was her great-grandfather, Shlagel Feivel Frank, and they stayed there for 40 days and did not talk one word other than Divrei Torah and Tefillah. And my grandmother never saw Rav Sol Salanter because she was too young. Her sisters, Rav Zalman's wife and Rav Moshe Mordechai's wife, saw Rav Sol Salanter, but she did see, as a six-year-old girl, one of the great Talmidim Rav Sol Salanter, his name was Itzel Petterberger. He was the Rav in Petterberg, and he was a Gain Olam, and a very big tzaddik, and he was a young man at the time. In 1885, my grandmother passed away in 1966. I was an older teenager, and my grandmother lived with us, and I remember her telling me over the story herself. She was a 6-year-old girl, and it was her job to bring the food to the Talmidim Rabbi Yisrael Salanter on the third floor of their huge house. So when she brought the food, I remember her describing it to me. He opened the door, and I remember how she told me, "I'm in a hecher and a shena." He was tall and good looking, and when she handed him over the food, instead of saying thank you, he would bow down his body halfway to say thank you, but not utter the words thank you, which sounds beyond extreme. And what loss could there be in simply saying thank you to a 6-year-old girl? But this was the minhag of Rabbi Yisrael's Talmidim, that not one word was uttered other than learning and tefillah and Yer Shemayim. But otherwise they didn't talk. And they made up with their wives beforehand when they got engaged. Before they got engaged, if you can't handle them leaving for 40 days, that's fine also, but that could have been a deal breaker for their shidduchim. In other words, that's what they wanted to do. Now, it sounds very extreme. What was the reason why it was important for them not to even utter a word, like a simple thank you, for 40 days? One of the Talmidim that's brought in, Nusa Musar, his wife had to go in for surgery for an early pregnancy, and he came out and communicated with the doctor, Biksav, didn't write it down. So it seems like a very extreme thing to do, and what was the necessity of doing it? And the idea is that these people had such self-control on their speaking for 40 days that you can be sure that the rest of the year, whenever they spoke, everything they said was measured. And not just that it wasn't Lashon Hara or Rechilas or inappropriate words, but everything they spoke in life was measured because of the extreme kindness dibur that they made for these 40 days. The great Mashgiach of the Mir, Rabbi Yerucham Lavovitz, who died in 1938, said he was not on the Madrega to do what his Rabbeim did. That was an earlier generation did that. Altar from Slabatka, the Altar from Kelem, Talmidim Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, they did this, but he said he wasn't on the level that he could go for 40 days and not talk. And he'd never tried to do it because he knew he wasn't on that level. And the message of the story is not to stop talking, because that's not for us. But the message is that these people's control on how they talked was so phenomenal that they never had to say, "I'm sorry," "Oh, was that hurtful?" "Oh, I didn't mean it," or things like that, because they went to such an extreme about controlling how they talked that they never had, during the rest of the year, times when they were interacting with people in a normal way. They had total shlita on their keach hadibur, and that made their whole experience in life a totally different experience because of the extent that they went. This is not practical advice, but it's here to prove to us the importance of how we speak, the words we choose, and many, many times, most of us will say things at different places and different times where we could have said it better or not said it at all. But it just came to us that we say it. The Gaon even tells us that a person can prepare when he's speaking to a king, to somebody very special. Then he has a whole speech prepared, and then when it comes to the king, he doesn't say the exact words that he prepared. That's Me Hashem Ma'ana Loshen. You always need help from Hashem to say the right thing. Because under pressure situations, under difficulties, under work conditions that can be challenging, right, what happens is that we can say things that are hurtful and inappropriate, crossing boundaries, not because it was a planned thing to do, but the situation just allowed for such a thing to happen. So our job, especially interacting in the world, and in the workplace befrat, but it's true in our own homes too, in the workplace befrat, is to understand that controlling the words we say and how we talk is one of the key aspects of living a life of tzniyus. In other words, you have to interact with people, and you have to talk to them, and there can be pressures in an office, in a school, whenever it is, right? In the workplace, right? And you had a pressure day at home, you had a pressure day from something that happened with one of your kids, pressure with your husband, pressure with one of the people in your business. And wherever you're working, wherever it was, there could be a pressure. And because of that pressure, we said something that was either misunderstood or not appreciated or inappropriate, even though it wasn't bekavana, wasn't premeditated, it wasn't something that we were thinking of doing, just something that happened. So if we understand that tznius requires an awareness of chayim hamavis b'yad haloshin, that words are so important, right? So even though we can't be like these great people that never had these nisyanis, that always were careful because of their training, but we can try in some small way to train ourselves that how we talk and the words we use make an enormous difference in the workplace. And it makes an enormous difference at home too, but in the workplace it can make a difference also. So to realize that dibur is such an important aspect of our lives and how we use it is a very important thing. In fact, the Gaon tells us a very interesting idea. Most averus that people do are averus that come with physical pleasure. Eating something that's not kosher, right? It's a physical pleasure. Sleeping is a physical pleasure. Connecting with spouses is a physical pleasure. There are many physical pleasures that human beings have that can be rewarding and can be negative if they're done inappropriately, right? Speaking is not a physical pleasure. You can enjoy food, you can enjoy sleeping, you can enjoy touching, but what is the physical pleasure of talking? There is no physical pleasure. So why the Gaon asks, is Lashon Hara a Yetzer Hara? Why is Rechilas Lashon a Yetzer Hara? Why is inappropriate language a Yetzer Hara? There's nothing, you don't get anything from it physically. And still, us humans have that test. Why is that? So the Gaon said something very deep. The Gaon says that because you can use your mouth to say Divrei Torah, which is the highest level of Dibur, because you can use your mouth to daven to Hashem and talk to Hashem. So since the Koyach HaDibur has such a powerful Koyach L'Toiv, Zeh L'Uma Zeh Osa L'Kim, to give humans the choice of using dibur negatively. Hence, the Yetzer Hara to say Lashon Hara, it's hard to talk inappropriately. It comes from the power of dibur being something which is so powerful, the toiv, zelu mazel osa l'kim, so Hashem made the keneged, that you can now use words to be so hurtful. And the same idea applies to machlekes. The Maharal writes in a place something which bothered me for years. It says there's nothing that humans desire more in the negative than machlekes. Desire machlekes? Who desires machlekes? We all are peaceful people. But there's some inner strength of people, us people. When we talk about people, we shouldn't see others. Us. People can make in families, in businesses, in shuls, in all kinds of places. You can make machlekes by standing up for what you believe is true and say Sashem Shemaim too. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. You got to know. But there's Yetzirah for machlekes. Where does this Yetzirah come from? This bothered me for years. When I saw this Yisrael of the Gain, I understood it as follows. That because Lematzah Kodesh Baruch Hu Kli Masik Bracha El HaShalom, because Shalom is the biggest Kayach L'Toiv for all good that comes out, the same idea happens in the Yetzirah for the opposite. That because Shalom is the most powerful force of good, Shalom has the ability to hold all good things. It's the basis of all good. Shalom, that's the pinnacle. Kivan shara kodesh baruch hu, Hashem saw Yisrael sonu es hamachlekes. They hated machlekes, but v'ahavu es hashalom. They love shalom. And they made one encampment around the Mishkan, around Moshe Rabbeinu. Amar Kosh Baruch Hu, Achshav Etein Es Tirasi. Now I'm going to give my Torah, because Torah can only be given with Shalom. So it's my understanding that the reason why Shalom, the reason why Machlekes has such a Yetzirah, is because of the power of Shalom L'Toiv. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Shalom makes Zelu Mazeh to give the Nisayin of Machlekes. And this brings us to the same question that occurs in offices as well. And that is, how does one conduct themselves in an office when there are not just men there, but they're women and men together working in office? How do we create the important balance of tznius, of talking appropriately, and of making sure that there's never any boundaries that are crossed? And this is an assign that happens in the world, right? Where does an assign come from? What's the sheirish? What's the root of this assign? And I believe the answer lies in the same idea that we proved by Shalom HaMachlekes and by Dibur and by Lashon Hara. And that is that in relationships, there are many, many relationships in life. There's parents and children. There's brothers and brothers, brothers and sisters, friendships. They're all very important relationships. The most important relationship, if I said it for an hour, it wouldn't be enough, right, is the relationship of a husband and wife. That's the most important relationship in the Torah. That's where Hashras HaShechina comes, from marriage, from the connection of a husband and a wife. That's the greatest relationship, the most important. Chazal tell us such a strong lushan to show this point. If a woman passes away and she leaves over a husband and kids, it's devastating for children, no matter what age, young or old, to lose a mother. If a man dies and leaves over a wife and children, it's devastating for children to lose a father. And Chazal talk in a lashon that sounds almost insensitive. Ein isha mesa ela labaila. A woman only dies for her husband. Ein baal mes. A husband only dies ela liishtai, for his wife. Now, anyone who's lost parents know it's a terribly great loss. But still, the Chazal say, no loss is comparative to the loss of a spouse. Because in the way the Eibushter set up the Bria, that connection is the connection, the ultimate connection, the way Adam was created, was to have Chava is an Ezer Kenegdai, and that is the most important relationship in life. The most important relationship in life. We're not taking away from Kibbutz Avim is an important relationship. Vital. Being good parents is vital. But everything is based be'ikr, on husband and wife. That's how the Eibushter set up the Bria. And that is the Metzius. That's the truth. That's the ikr. Because this relationship, which is a relationship of intimacy on all levels, is such an important relationship, and is at the basis of Yiddishkeit. Sefer Shmos starts with Eilu Shmos b'nei Yisrael b'nei Mitzrayim Eis Yaakov ish u'beisai bo. Bias is the first word in Shmos. The last words in Shmos are that the Anan covered the whole base Israel, covered the house of Klal Yisrael. Bias is the first pasuk of Shmos. Bias is the last pasuk of Shmos for a reason. Rabbi Lansky explained, because the whole Sefer Shmos is talking about building of the bias. Koyisamr leves Yaakov. Vayaslam Batim. The Mishkan was the Beis Hashem. Klal Yisrael got married, Kav Yochel to Rabban Shalom with Matan Torah. It's all part of Bias. Where was the Karban Pesach brought? After it was brought, it has to be eaten in the house. Sela Veis Ovis, Sela Bias. The Bias, the home, the husband, the wife, the connection, is the essence of building Klal Yisrael. Because this relationship is the cornerstone of Yiddishkeit, that's why Hashem made Zelu Mazeh Nisyonis of Tzcharim in the Kavis, when people are interacting with others that are not their spouses. That's why that's potentially the greatest area of Yetzirah and weakness, because the relationship of marriage is the most important relationship. So the Zelum Hazeh made it that, since Hashem gives everything with a test and everything with choices, so that relationship is the most important, and therefore the most damaging relationships are when there's intermingling of Tzcharim and Nekevis that are not according to the Torah. That's the most self-destructive thing there is in the world. The most self-destructive. There are three cardinal sins that a person has to give up their life for, even if nobody's around. Right? Three cardinal averus. Murder, Aveda Zara, and inappropriate relations, men and women. Why are those the three cardinal sins? The Morale says, because the worst thing you can do against Hashem is to do avodah zarah, worshiping another god. The worst thing you can do to another human being is ritzicha, to kill a person. The worst thing that people do that's self-destructive is when their relations with the opposite gender are inappropriate. That's self-destructive. Like a marriage is the biggest building block for life, and for family, and for Klal Yisrael, and for Kedusha, inappropriate relationships are the most self-destructive things that there are. That's Zelu Mazed, the Ben Lom Lomokon, Lom Chaveray, and what the Maral and Rousseau Slanter talk about as Bein Odom La'atzmai, within a person himself. So, if we understand the importance of these demarcations and understand how vital they are to the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael, then when people go into offices and they find that some of the people act too stiff or not friendly enough, or why they're being, you know, standoffish or whatever it is, in an office when there is men and women there, they should realize that that is a good thing. And that's the way it should be. I don't know if people were expecting this to be a shiur about the details of exactly what's going on in office, which I'm not going to get into because I don't believe that there's a one-size-fits-all answer to these things. But I do believe that the importance of understanding the differences and respecting boundaries on these inyanim are essential, and that it's something that we can all learn from and grow in because of the nature of this type of negative interaction, even if it doesn't lead to anything chas v'shalom of a major averus or something like that, but in the ability of things that could happen in an office, in a school, in any place where there's intermingling, by necessity, you have to realize that because the Torah values the relationship of Zachar Nekeva to be so special, is exactly the reason why you need extra gedorim when it comes to this. And this is a sociological fact, that different kehilas in Klal Yisrael dealt with and deal with how they make the separation of the genders of how they're noyig. For instance, in the Hasidic world, they take a school of thought of they separate in their dating process, in their weddings, in everything to a much, much stronger degree than is done in the Litvisha world. In the 1940s, when Rabbi Yaakov Hamenetsky and Rabbi Ruderman and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein made weddings for their children, there was mixed seating at all weddings. That doesn't mean that that was an ideal, but that's what happened. That's where America was at then. And one of the benefits that Hasidim brought to the world is a symbiotic relationship between different groups in Klal Yisrael. The Hasidim benefited greatly from the yeshiva world in getting a greater appreciation for learning, and our world, the yeshiva world, got a greater appreciation for going the extra mile in tznius by the chassidic world. Doesn't mean that what was done till then was wrong, but as the klal adapted to stricter differences, they became necessary because that is what's more effective in terms of making sure that the boundaries aren't crossed, etc. There's a big controversy that goes on. Some of my own friends and I have different opinions about this. Right now, in all of the Frum magazines, they do not have pictures of ladies. And there are people who take objection to that. I have close friends that think it's inappropriate. They can look back at pictures from 100 years ago, and you can see Rabbi Aaron Kotler sitting next to his wife and cousins, men and women, in the same picture, and other gedolim as well, which you would not find in the Hasidic world, right? And they can say, well, why do things have to change? So some people will tell you, well, the magazines want to cater to the Hasidim too, and Hasidim don't want pictures of women, so it's an economic thing that they don't put it in. But besides economics, I personally believe that it's not a question of usser and mutter, right and wrong, even if 100 years ago they did that, and even if 80 years ago they had mixed seating, kosher mixed seating, you know, not a man between two ladies, but men and women sitting at the same table, right? The fact that today that's unheard of, right, is, in my mind, a good thing. And because we live in a world that's more open and more degenerative, and the values of tznius and of appropriateness have gone down in the world, because of that fact, I personally believe that taking on those stringent positions, which wouldn't have existed in the yeshiva world 50 years ago, 100 years ago, are a good thing today. Not all my friends agree with me. Some say, you know, that we're going too far. I think it's not a problem, because we have to react to the way the world is and the nature of how the world has become, in terms of how people dress, how people interact, what people talk about, right? That necessitates a stronger and more stringent hanhaga. So it's not a question of usser mutter. It's a question of, is that the best thing to do given the world we live in and the fact that we're all affected by the values of the world? So by going the extra mile and doing things that are seemingly extreme are really a proper, in my mind, I have good friends that argue, in my mind, a proper hanhaga that we should accept because of the way the world is. So that's an example of something could be technically mutter, doesn't mean because it's technically mutter that it should be done, because of the nature of the world we live in. So if you look at it that way, that to say what the rules of engagement or non-engagement are in office places can vary from Williamsburg to Lakewood to out of town to different places, about exactly where lines are drawn, and these are not simple questions that can answer in a simple Shulchan Aruch manner of us or mutter, like people are used to, but there are nuanced questions that may depend on the particular situation. But to understand that it's our job as B'nai and B'nai Torah to realize the importance of this, and understand that the best way for us to imbue our children, I believe, with tznius, and therefore through that, how it will affect the workplace, is not just a question of dress and shaitels and all the stuff that people are busy talking about. I'm not saying that people don't have a right to say different things that they feel will be better for tznius, but I'm suggesting that the ultimate tznius comes from going back to what we started in the beginning about talking about dibur itself, talking, how one talks, the words they use, the way we present ourselves, the way we interact with others, to understand that we are an Ummah of Kedoshim, we're Heilige Menschen, and Klal Yisrael needs the Koyach, the strength of Avos and Imos, equally in order to create the right balance in Klal Yisrael. Ramban writes in an obscure place, not in Chumash, that the main reason why Avram Avinu had, this is a Kabbalistic idea which I don't, which is beyond my pay grade, but I'm just sharing with you the idea, just to understand the importance, that the main reason why Avram had Hay added to his name to be called Avraham was because there are 13 letters in Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. You can add it up, but trust me, trust Ramban. And there are 12 letters in Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And in order for there to be 13 letters in Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so that the 13 of the Avos and the 13 of the Imos can spell, can add up to 26, which is a Shem of Yudke Vavke. So it's the combined effort of Avos and Imos together on equal footing, each being 13, that's going to create the Kedusha and a connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that proper interaction of Avos and Imos create an improper hanhaga of men and women does the opposite to take away from the Kedusha. So where you draw the line and how you draw the line, exactly what you do, names and all these details, which are not unimportant things and may depend on the different setups there are, but with the overview and with understanding and the importance of keeping the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael intact by reserving the connections of the way they're supposed to be in a Torah-dika way, v'haft re'echa kameicha is a mitzvah to love every Jew. But v'haft re'echa kameicha does not say that therefore you talk to somebody from the opposite gender the same way you talk to somebody from the own gender. You can still have obviously struggles with another person, right? But it doesn't mean that you talk in the same lashon, because we have differences, because we were made differently, because our connections are supposed to be in family and marriage and in the appropriate eifanim. And therefore, making our own gedarim, choosing places to work of where there's sensitivity to this and understanding to this, where from both sides of the aisle, everybody understands that the relations are not the same. They're not supposed to be the same. Your friendships are supposed to be with people that are men with men and women with women. Your friendship is supposed to be with your wife. Your friendship is supposed to be with your kids. Your friendship is supposed to be with your friends. But different than the Welt, we see them as separate, different, and by design, those separations help for the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael by being sensitive to that. Part of the whole breakdown of family in America is because of the lack of tzias, because of the lack of understanding the roles, because of the lack of not making proper gedarim. So our job, if you're in the workplace, is that whatever interactions have to take place have to take place with a cheshbon of remembering that the words you use and the way you act, the way you talk, has to be with a cheshbon, and not to assume that no matter how chashuv any person is, whoever the person is, the biggest tzaddik, the biggest tzaddikus, the most special person, the biggest talmid chacham, the Ribbono Shel Olam set up the world that everyone has challenges, everyone can have nisyanus, and everyone has to do their job not to make the nisyanus for the other people difficult. And the way we not only dress, but talk and act in the most Torah-dika refined ways are the ways that are going to create the proper boundaries so that the relationships that are supposed to be intense and supposed to be deep and are supposed to be physical and are supposed to be meaningful are that way in the appropriate setting and not at inappropriate in any level whatsoever when it's not appropriate. And to realize that's our achrayus every day you walk into a store, every day you walk into an office, every day you walk into a school where there are people that have to interact, men and women. There are rabbanim around who feel that, I don't happen to agree with this personally, but there are rabbanim around who feel that men should never see women therapists and women should never see men therapists. And there are very chash rabbanim that take that position. Right? I don't happen to share that same position, but I do think that there have to be super duper gedarm for those things, for therapists, for rabbanim, for everyone, and the details are dependent on every situation. But even if those their interactions in an office or in therapy or from a rav, the gedarm that we make and the anhugas that we have and the sensitivity of it has to be something that is front and center focused and detailed and nuanced to every possible degree to make that any type of necessary pegisha has to be done with the dharm of the Torah in order to understand that there shouldn't be any infringements whatsoever on things that were not even meant to be infringements but become that way sometimes because of situations. And therefore, the more we take on the position that the tznius that all of us have to exhibit in how we talk and how we walk, not just in how we dress, that too, but in our whole demeanor has to be, you're looking at the goal of resource lanter, you don't make a big deal of yourself, you don't show who you are, to be a tznua within yourself, to be, but the best way to teach our kids tznius is not by talking about lengths of clothing, even though that can be, that has to be sometimes discussed as well. It's if you live a tznius like a life, and not a loud life, a Torah life, a valued life, a chashuva life, then the other things follow as well in dress, in talking, and everything else. It's being a tzniyistik mensch. If the mensch is tzniyistik and the person understands that Kedushas Yisrael requires a tzniyis in your essence, then if our essence is tzniyistik, then it's not just a question of the details of particular clothing, but is I am a tzniyis person before I even, besides a man has to have his tznius and a lady her tznius, each according to whatever their dharma are, but as a person, I'm a yid. A yid is a tznua. A yid is a bahal mensch. A yid is a tznua in his talking. Talking has to be tzniistic. Talking has to be tzniistic. Using the right words has to be tzniistic. Bowing down to a six-year-old kid so that the rest of the year you never talk inappropriately is worth it, and it makes a difference. No one should stop talking for 40 days, but all of us should learn from this lesson of how people that were careful and tznua in even their talking and everything they did, they live an exalted life, a richer life, a textured life, a life that speaks of the Yiddishkeit and what Torah is supposed to be, and through that, we'll know how to act interact in offices as well, in businesses as well, in schools as well, because our essence is as Yidden. Ma Hashem lakecha derishim ucho, ki masayis chesed, masayis mishpat, v'atznei aleches, ma Hashem lakecha. To be a tenua person. the mahus of the person has to be a tzinuva. That's how you talk. We're not talking about even before you get the dressing, before we talk to any other details, we're talking about, am I a tzinuva mensch? Am I busy talking about myself? Am I being more tyridic, more im Hashem lekecha, that I was given a gift of whatever kaychus I have, and I'm going to use those gifts to help fellow man and to serve Hashem and be a tzinuva mensch? If you're a tzinuva mensch, you're a tzinuva in your home, you're a tzinuva in your office, you're a tzinuva in the store, you're a tzinuva with yourself. And that's what we're looking for in our lives, to be our metzias, should be a metzias, an essence of tzinuva.